Here on Daf Tezayinam in Beis, the Gemara Darshan's a pasuk in Megillah. It says, "Divrei Shalom v'Emes." Omer Reb Tanchum, this we saw yesterday. Melamed shetzricha Megillah sirtut ke'amita shel Torah. So here's a concept called sirtut. Now, in the Yalkut HaBiurim, he points out.
Let's see, cover design high. That doesn't tell you the work.
Yeah. In the back, he has here a machlokas between Rashi and Rabbi Tam. If you'll notice, the Gemara doesn't say that the requirement of sirtut in Megillah is the same as the requirement of sirtut in Sefer Torah. It just says kamita shel Torah. Rashi understands Amita Shel Torah means Sefer Torah, and a Sefer Torah needs Sirtut. Now, what we know is that a mezuzah needs Sirtut. Tefillin did not require Sirtut. Rashi assumes that the status of a Sefer Torah requiring Sirtut is the same as a mezuzah, and hence Amita Shel Torah. Rabbi Tam, not here but in Menachos, disagrees with Rashi, and he holds that mezuzah needs sirtut, but neither tefillin nor sefer Torah requires sirtut. Now it's a little bit complicated here, because it doesn't mean that Rabbi Tam completely does away with the halach of sirtut. Even Rabbi Tam agrees that there are specific requirements of sirtut in the sefer Torah. Just the basic requirement of sirtut does not apply according to Rabbeinu Tam in Sefer Torah. Therefore, it's enough, for example, that you do sirtut on the four corners, which is called the Arba Peos, Lamala Lamata Mishnei Atzdodin. Okay, that's a long discussion here that we're not going into. But really, the requirement of sirtut in Sefer Torah, according to Rabbeinu Tam, is only Zekeli Me'anveir. It's only to embellish the Sefer Torah, make it more beautiful. And therefore, Rabbeinu Tam says that when our Gemara compares a Megillah to Amita Shel Torah, the words Amita Shel Torah refer not to Sefer Torah, but rather to Mezuzah. And Megillah has the same status as Mezuzah, both requiring Sirtut. And Rabbeinu Tam has a basic objection to Rashi, and he says the following. That later on, the Gemara on Daf Yutes has a hekesh between Sefer Torah and Megillah. And if, according to Rashi, Sefer Torah requires Sirtut, then by virtue of this hekesh, Megillah would require Sirtut. The Gemara doesn't need the pasuk Divrei Emes V'Shalom. The Ran tries to defend Rashi, and he says, Lulei HaHekesh, if not for the hekesh, Lamita Shel Torah, Hava Mina, we would have said Lo Yitztarchu Sirtut b'Megillah. Share Megillah Nikreis Gamken Igeres. So we would have thought that the hekesh between Megillah and Sefer Torah does not apply to the requirement of Sirtut, because of the name that the Megillah gives to Megillah Sester. It's called an Igeres. And an Igeres, therefore, would not need Sirtut. What do we derive from the Hekesh? So there's a halacha of Chute Gidin that, with regard to Hitil Ba'ashlosha Chute Gidin Kshera. Alright, so that we have to see later on. Now, you recall in the past I quoted this sefer called Pachad Yitzchak. He has something here on Sirtut. We'll take a stab at it, as I call it. I'm not sure that I'll be able to understand it totally. But he says the following. Why is it that when the Gemara wants to use a term to refer to a Sefer Torah, as far as Sirtut is concerned, the way Rashi learns this sugya, it uses the phrase Ke'amita Shel Torah. Why the emphasis on Amita Shel Torah? Why did you say Tzricha et Sirtut ki Sefer Torah? Obviously, the Gemara is darshaning the words Divrei Shalom v'Emes, and the word emes is a reference to the Torah. But what's the emphasis here on amita shel Torah? It sounds like there's a nuance of a meaning over here. Now, based on various sources, he proves that the word emes, which is the opposite of the word kazav, Rashi says in Parashas Vayeshev, on a pasuk Vayakiziv, that refers to something that has an end point. It only lives or exists for a certain period of time. It's temporary. Emes is something that lives forever. Also keep in mind that the Gemara says that the word emes is made up of three letters, Aleph, Mem, and Tav, which are the first, middle, and last letters of the Aleph base. And that's the Gemara Masechet Shabbos in Perek HaBona, which is the sugya of Osios. He says the following: whenever you start with something like the Torah, and you go all the way to the end, what you're trying to indicate is that it really continues endlessly. That's the concept of emes. Okay, now he has a pasuk in Sefer Yirmiyah. It says the following: Hinei yamim ba'im v'karati es beis Yisrael v'es beis Yehuda bris chadasha lo kibris asher karati es avosam biyom hachziki biyodam lo tziyom me'eretz Mitzrayim ki zos habris asher echras nasati es torasi bekirbam v'alibam echtevenu. So if you read this pasuk literally, it sounds like
use this as a reference to the
right
New Testament.
I know. I didn't want to get into that. But he's saying that the bris itself is sort of inscribed on the lev, on the heart itself. To be also zman, sha'olav hasnabe Yirmiyah. Yirmiyah here teaches us about a period of time when they were mechadish the klaf of the Sefer Torah. And the klaf of the Sefer Torah represents libo shel Adam. So the libo shel Adam, on which the osios are inscribed, represent the klaf of the Sefer Torah. And the bris itself, which is inscribed on the klaf, is inscribed on the lev of Klal Yisrael. That's what Yirmiyahu HaNavi seems to indicate. And he says the following: Bevada, it's clear, sheba osioseha shel Torah with regard to the osios of the Torah, there will be no change whatsoever. So you don't need some sort of a bris chadasha when you're talking about the osios of the Torah. And now we can come back to our Gemara. The Gemara says that Megillah tzrichat sirtut kamita shel Torah. Why? Because sirtut applies to the osios and not to the klaf. So with regard to the klaf, we saw that there'll be a bris chadasha that's going to be inscribed on the lev, which is the klaf. But as far as the osios are concerned, that's called emes. Emes means aleph, mem, tav. From the beginning to middle to the end, it keeps going. It's always reliable. It's endless. It doesn't terminate. And therefore, the phrase "kamita shel Torah," when it's referring to the osios, is because sirtut, the halach of sirtut, is halacha not in klaf. And again, this is a tosis we didn't learn yet, but it's halach in osios. And with regard to osios, we have the concept of bilti nishtana; it doesn't change. As opposed to the klaf, there's no din of sirtut on the klaf because the klaf represents something that changes. And it means that when a person's lev is like the klaf of a Sefer Torah, then what's going to be written, the osios, on that klaf is something that's permanent, something that's endless, and something that's eternal. That's the concept of Amita Shel Torah. Now let's get back to the Gemara's Drash LaYehudim, Hoysa'ora, V'Simcha, V'Sasam V'Yikar. Ora, says the Gemara, Zu Torah. And the question we want to ask is the following: why does the Megillah use the word Ora in reference to Torah. Why not just use the word Torah, like Yehuda Moisa Torah? Why does it say Ora? And in order to answer this question, we're going to talk about Yom Matan Torah. Yom Matan Torah is commemorated on Chag HaShavuos. Now, with regard to Chag HaShavuos, which is the Yom Matan Torah, we have a pasuk in Mishlei, and the pasuk says Torah Or. The Torah is Or. So what we have here are 2 days on the calendar, the Hebrew calendar, which are days of Torah. One is Shavuos and one is Purim. Right, like Yehuda Moisa Ora means Torah. And Shavuos, of course, represents Matan Torah. But the difference between Shavuos and Purim is that Shavuos is called the Yom of Matan Torah, and Shavuos is Torah Or, right? Because the Pasuk initially says Torah Or. And in the case of Purim, it goes in the reverse order. It's Or, which is Torah. So in Pachad Yitzchak, he wants to understand what's the difference between Shavuos, where it's Torah and then Or, and in Purim, it's Or and then Torah. Now, obviously, if we, even without seeing what he has to say, when we think about it chronologically, obviously Yom Matan Torah is earlier. So we start with Torah. And the Torah generates some sort of byproduct, which is called Or. It produces Or. In the case of Purim, we're already in a later period of time. We already have Torah. But there we're going to have some sort of linkage to Or. And the Or is going to give us Torah. So in order to understand this, he stretches his arm out to a whole other different subject. And that's a parsha in Shmuel Aleph. And the Tanakh tells us that David made a takon. He instituted something which became a choku mishpat ad hayom hazeh. What was his takona? There were certain battles where they took booty, they took shalal, and then the law was that you'd have to divide it up amongst the soldiers. David made a takon. What was his takona? I'm just filling in something from yesterday. The takana was, there were two groups of Jews that went out to as part of the military campaign. There was what's called Hayordim L'Tocha Milchama, right? Those are those the frontline soldiers who actually battled. And then there were, quote, Na'arim Hashomrim Alakelim. There were those who were in the back lines, right? And they were in charge of protecting the kalim. Kalim probably includes the weapons and includes also, the food supplies, whatever it was. And David made a takana. What was his takana? Sheyichleku yachad b'chol ha-shalal v'abiza shel mechama. You would have thought that maybe the majority or the main section or part of the booty of the shalal should go to the soldiers, right? After all, they're the ones who are on the front line, putting themselves in danger. And the shomrim, who are back, protecting the kalim, they should get a smaller percentage. Came along David, and he made a takana that we split the booty equally. And even the na'arim, who are shomrim, will get 50% of the shalal. And this became a takana l'doros. So the question is there something more profound going on over here? Is there something perhaps symbolic? So we go back to the concept of geula, of redemption. We have geulas Mitzrayim. Geulas Mitzrayim brings us to the bris of entering into Klal Yisrael, because the Gemara in Masechta Krisus derives all the halachas of Gerus, of entering into Klal Yisrael, from Yitzias Mitzrayim. And the Gimel Dvarim Nichnasu Avoseinu B'Mitzrayim. So after, during the period of, right before Yitzias Mitzrayim, and afterwards we have all the parts of Gerus. What about all the Geulos subsequent to Yitzias Mitzrayim? There were many periods of time where Hashem saved us and redeemed us. He says that we would classify those as Shmira al Habris. Just like there were the soldiers who were the Shomrim al Akelim, right, behind the front lines, so too we have all the Geulos subsequent to Yitzias Mitzrayim. Yitzis Mitzrayim represents the original Geula that led up to Matan Torah, the Bris, but now we need other Geulos, and they're going to protect the Jewish people. It's like at the end of Ma'ariv, I don't mean the end of Ma'ariv, I mean the end of Birchas Kriyat Shema before Ma'ariv, we say, Shomer es Amo Yisrael La'ad. So you need the Shmira. And the Gemara calls that Geula Arichta, you remember that? It's not a hefsek between Geula and Tefillah. So there's something called Geula Richta. And what's the Geula Richta? That's called the Shmira. And this is all indicated in a pasuk in Parshas Bechukosai. It says there in the Tochacha, Lo ma'astim v'lo ga'altim l'hafer brisi tam. And Chazal say that the words l'hafer brisi, that I didn't reject you and I don't find you despicable, I'll always maintain that bris relationship, Hainu bimei golus paras. So Chazal identified that with the golus of paras at the time of Mordechai. So I'll tell you exactly where that Gemara is. He has it here in the back. He says, what number is this? Number Gimel, sorry. It's a Gemara. Oh, here, Megillah. This I don't remember. If somebody could do me a favor and open up, for some reason I don't remember this Gemara. Megillah Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. You see, it's time for Chazara. Lahafir Brisi, Hainu Bimei Golus Paras. Can you find such a Gemara? Okay. So he says the following: Yisrael Vo Raisa Chadhu. Yeah, you found it. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Good. It says yeah, you made paras.
Yeah.
Okay. He says Chayel Shel Torah Makbil Meim LeChayel Shel Knesset Yisrael. Now, just like in the history of Klal Yisrael, we have periods of time. We have the original bris, and then we have a period in which Hashem redeems us from danger and is shomer es habris. He continues to maintain the bris. He says so too in Divrei Torah. We have periods of time. The original period of time is when we receive the Torah. The Torah is transmitted for the first time. Correct? So he says the following: that the first time we hear Torah, we absorb a certain amount of knowledge of Torah. He calls that rechishat hasagot chadashot, new concepts that we acquire. But then he says we need a continuous period of time of shmira, of guarding at Torah, and making sure that we review our Torah and we don't forget our Torah. He says these two parallel the two concepts of Geula. There's the original Geula, and then there's subsequent Geulos like Paras, in which we protect the original Bris, and Hashem is good, Lo Ma'astim, Lo Ga'a, etc. So therefore we have the original Kabbalah Satorah that took place on the 6th of Sivan, on Chag HaShavuos. But now, we get to the point at the period of Paras, where we need a new Kabbalah Sator. But that new Kabbalah Sator, which is called Hadar Kibluah Bimei Mordechai, right, at the time of Paras, that's really Shmiras HaBris. So he says the following: that the first time historically when God fulfills His promise that He will not be mefir es habris, that He will not violate the commitment that He has, that He made to Bnei Yisrael when they left Mitzrayim, is right here at the point of Haman. The Yeshua from Haman represents the first time of gilui, of revelation of this shmiras habris. So at the time of Melchemes HaMolech, which is again the battle against Haman, because Haman is Mizer HaMolech, he hasha asher ba nafsha shel Knesset Yisrael so feges letocha es hakava habura ki nesinas tokef le'erche haTorah knuya mikfar shel kelesi v'chashivusa vad v'bad im rechishas erchei Torah chadoshim. So he's saying that we have a new Kabbalah Satorah, which is no less important than the original Kabbalah Satorah. And all this happens at the moment that we go out to battle against Amalek. That's when Knesset Yisrael absorbs into their very essence this recognition that although the Torah was already given to them, there's no less significance to the second round of receiving the Torah, which is again, as we said before, the Shmiras HaBris. And if that be the case, then it makes sense that David HaMelech, when he goes out to the battle of Amalek, he makes this takana, and he says, we're going to divide the Shalal equally amongst those who are Yardin L'Macham and those who are Shomer Malakelim. This takana, which we accept for all time, that David HaMelech instituted, teaches us that there are two people that are dedicated to Torah. There's one Lomei Torah, or two periods of time, I should say. In one, there's the Lomei Torah who receives the Torah for the first time, and then he shomer es haTorah when he reviews his Torah, hachozer al Talmudo, and these two are integrated together in one entity, and that takes place at the time of Machias HaMolek. Because Hadar Kiblua now, at the time of Mordechai, means there's a new Kabbalah Satorah, which is as great and as significant as the Kabbalah Satorah at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. And all this becomes clear at the time that we go out to battle against Amalek. That there's the original, you know, the first round, and then there's the Shmira. There's the second round, which has to again strengthen us and be Shomer Sabris. So that happens in two periods of time. One period of time is the Geula from Mitzrayim. That's the original. And there's another period of time, the Geula from Paras at the time of Mordechai. And in Torah, we have the original Torah that was given at the time of Chag HaShavuos. And now we have a second Torah, which is received at the time of Purim. And he says the following. Chag HaShavuos represents the Haschola, the beginning. That's called Torah. It ends up with R, right? The Pasuk says Torah, R. R is the impact. R is what we get from the Torah. R represents the impact of Torah on our souls. When we get to Purim, we can't begin with Torah because we've already received the Torah. But what we can begin with is Ora. Right, Ora is that impact of Torah as a result of Chag HaShavuos. And now we have the Ora Zu Torah. So it goes in the reverse order. Because now we are dedicated to Ora, we appreciate and experience Ora, and that becomes Torah. That's defined as Torah. And he says the following, this is the end. Mikeva Shekabolas HaTorah B'Chag HaShavuos Hi Hodor Kiblua. It's a second round of Kabbalah Satorah. Hare kachu seder advarim. HaKabbalah Rishona molida b'nefesh, as a result of the Torah that we receive, it engenders into the soul, R is the connection to Torah. And then that R, which has a connection to Torah, at the time of the second round of Kabbalah Satorah, that generates Torah. So we start with R and we end with Torah. So Chag HaShavuos becomes the Av, which is Torah, and the Tolda becomes Or. That's called Ki Torah Or. But Chag HaPurim, the Av, becomes the Or. That's what we start with. And the Tolda becomes Torah. Or is in Torah. Okay, that's more or less what I wanted. I didn't realize how long it would take us. Okay, Rabbosai, where are we up to now? Let's go back to Daf Tezayin on the Beis. You remember that the last thing that we studied was the fact that Mordechai, because of his involvement in saving Jewish lives, could no longer dedicate himself, as he used to in his early years, to the study of Torah. So towards the end of Daf Tezayin Amid Beis, the Gemara has a statement here. Let's count up from the bottom. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines up from the bottom. Omer Rav Yosef, Gadol Talmud Torah Yoser Mehatzolas Nefashos. Okay, now Rav Yosef has another proof. Our proof here was based on the Gemara, on the pasuk at the end of the Megillah that said Ratzu L'Rov Echov. But now Rav Yosef has another proof that Mordechai goes down one notch as a result of his dedication to Hatzolas Nefashos. And again, that proves that Talmud Torah is even greater than Atzolos Nefashos. I'll just very quickly review the Taz that we met, that we studied in great length yesterday. Obviously, the halacha is that when you have a sakana, the Torah says v'chai bohem ain't dov sha'omed b'fnei pikuach nefesh. We have to drop everything, including Torah study, for the sake of Hatzolah. However, it's a great eschus if the Torah sends a shliach, someone else who could do that work for you, and you could dedicate yourself to the study of Torah. So inherently, Torah is even greater, superior to Hatzolos Nefashos. But as far as the laws of Kedima, as we discussed yesterday, then certainly Hatzolos Nefashos takes precedence.
Could it be that when we talk about Torah being greater, it's greater in Kavod, but the mitzvah, like if you say if somebody saves somebody else's life, right. Reuven saved Shimon. Shimon's a big common Hachman, so he's just saved all of his Torah and all the Torah he's going for.
I think that this idea of Kavod that you're mentioning is also connected to this Taz. That the person who's dedicated to Torah, and he becomes almost like a, as we discussed before, I don't know if you were here, a klaf of Torah, and the osios of Torah written on his heart, he has a greater kedusha than someone who's dedicated to Atzolos Nefashos, and therefore we have to be mechabed him. I don't want to spend too much time on this because I realize now, I'm not regretting it, but we spent a lot of time on this Pachad Yitzchak. So let's see if we can make a siyum on the perek, either today or latest tomorrow, before you gentlemen have to go off to where you have to go off to. Okay then? So it turns out like this. How do we know, says Rav Yosef, that Talmud Torah is greater? Now what we're going to do now is we're going to compare two psukim. One pasuk is in Nehemiah, and that pasuk has Mordechai on a list as number 6. An earlier pasuk, which I'll tell you where the earlier pasuk is in Sefer Ezra, there Mordechai is number 5 on the list. I guess in an election year it's important what number you are on the list.
That's right. That's right.
You know, you and I would think, what difference is there between 5 and 6? But you know, right.
Well, if you remember,
so it says the following. Meikara, originally, the pasuk describes Mordechai. Choshele Mordechai, Basar Arba. He's the number 5. He's after 4. Ulbasof, but at the end, and we'll see that in the middle between the beginning period and the end period, the whole story of Megillah and the Hatzalah takes place in between these two points in time. So the original point in time, which is recorded in Sefer Ezra, Mordechai is number 5 on the list, as we'll soon see. But later on, Lebasov, after the whole period of the Megillah, then Mordechai is listed as number 6 on the list, Basar Hamisha, after 5. So let's go through these two psukim. Now, Meikara, now let me try to explain what the word Meikara means. Literally, it means originally. Now, here's a chiddush, which I didn't know about, but there were two periods of time in which the Jews settled in Eretz Yisrael between the Churban of the first bais and the building of the second bais. The first period of time was during Malchus Koresh. And there was a whole bunch of Jews that came and flooded the land of Israel in order to build the second Beis HaMikdash. Because if you remember, originally Koresh gave the okay and permitted the rebuilding of the Mikdash. And the pasuk in Ezra mentioned some of the giants who came up on Aliyah from the Golah to Eretz Yisrael at the time of Koresh. Ksivit says, I'm going to read the whole pasuk. V'eila b'nei ha-medina ha-olim mishvi ha-gola asher bo im Zerubbabel. And here's the list. Yeshua, Nehemiah, Sroya, Re'elia, Mordechai Bilshan. Mordechai here is number 5. However, Lebasov, there was a 24-year period of time between that first group that settled in Eretz Yisrael during the time of Koresh, and the second group, which we're about to learn about in Sefer Nehemiah, they came back at the point of Daryavish. That's 24 years later. And there the Pasuk says, Ksiv Haboyim Im Zerubbabel Yeshua Nechemya Azaria, nice name, Ra'amya Nachmani, and Mordechai Bilshan. Mordechai is not listed here as number 5, but rather as number 6. What happens in the 24-year period of time here? So it seems, and that's what I have here in the Mepharshim here, that Mordechai, although he came on Aliyat Eretz Yisrael, on the Aliyah Rishona, at the time of Koresh, nevertheless he went back to Bavel after Koresh decided to terminate the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Then he came back a second time to Eretz Yisrael at the time of Daryavish, when they gave again permission to complete the building of the Beis HaMikdash. In between these two points in time, which is the beginning of the 24 years and the end of the 24 years, the beginning meaning when Mordechai came to Eretz Yisrael the first time with the first Aliyah, and the second time he came, his second Aliyah, in the middle is the whole story of Purim. So why is it that because of the story of Purim, all of a sudden Mordechai gets demoted from number 5 on the list to number 6 on the list? And the answer is, says Rav Yosef, because as a result of the entire episode of Purim, Mordechai had to be misbatel mitalmud Torah. He was dedicated to Hatzolos Nefashos, and he went down in his chashivus. So this is a second way of proving that a person, even though he's involved in an absolutely prioritized mitzvah of Hatzolah, nevertheless, once he gives up his learning Torah, he goes down a notch. Amar Rav Vitema Rav Shmuel Bar Mata, Gadol Talmud Torah, Yoser Mibeis HaMikdash. Now, from this point in time, until the end of the first parak of Masechta Megillah, the Gemara is going to try to prove where Talmud Torah fits on the hierarchy of the greatest mitzvahs. The greatest mitzvahs are the following: Hatzolos Nefashos, Binyan Beis HaMikdash, and Kibud Av Va'em. Those are the three top mitzvahs here in the way this sugya from here till the end of the parak is organized. Now, I mentioned in the past that one of the great commentaries on Agadata is the Sifsei Chachamim. The Sifsei Chachamim says that the Gemara that we're going to learn now from this point until the end of the parak is a Gemara which is called Lozu Afzu. What that means is that although normally when you go from A to B and B to C, you go from the lesser Chiddush to the bigger Chiddush and to the greatest Chiddush. Here it goes in the reverse. Lozu Afzu, meaning it's called Lozu V'Ein Tzarich Lomar Zu. I made a mistake. Lozu V'Ein Tzarich Lomar Zu. Which means the following. In the hierarchy, leave out Talmud Torah for a moment on the side, between Hatzolos Nefashos, Binyan Beis HaMikdash, and Kibud Av Va'Em, the greatest of the three is Hatzolos Nefashos. Now, we've already established that Talmud Torah is greater than Hatzolos Nefashos. Then, ipso facto, Talmud Torah with the Kal Vachomer is greater than Binyan Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara really is just spelling it all out for us. We could have derived this even on our own based on the fact that Hatzolos Nefashos is greater than Beis HaMikdash. Gadol Talmud Torah Yosef Binyan Beis HaMikdash. And now we're going to go to Sefer Ezra. Ezra had a disciple who was his outstanding Talmud, and his name was Baruch ben Neriah. There's a lot in Tanakh about this gentleman. And in Sefer Yirmiyahu, right, a lot of the laws that we learn about shtaros, for example, we derive from Baruch, but that's not for us now. And he says the following: Kol zman sheb Baruch ben Neriah kayom, as long as Ezra was alive, lo hinicho Ezra viola, he would not leave Ezra in Bavel, and he would not go to Eretz Yisrael. So in other words, at the time of the first group of people who went on Aliyah, which included Mordechai, as we saw the whole list, Ezra was still in Bavel. And because Baruch ben Neriah was a dedicated student, and he was a Talmud of Ezra, therefore, he did not opt to join the first group of people at the time of Koresh and make Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because even though they, that first group, would be involved in the fabulous mitzvah of Binyan Beis HaMikdash, because at that point Koresh gave the okay, nevertheless, Baruch Ben Eri made the decision that rather than make Aliyah to build the Beis HaMikdash, he would remain behind in order to continue studying Torah at the feet of Ezra.
This interprets it completely.
Completely different.
Reversed. Yes. Exactly. Ezra was a student of Baruch Ben Neriah, and right. Ezra didn't go.
Oh, I'm sorry. Correct. That as long I meant to say, as long as Baruch Ben Neriah was in Bavel, Ezra demurred from going to Aliyah Eretz Yisrael. I'm sorry. Okay. Amar Rabba, Amar Rabbi Yitzchok ben Shmuel, Amar the Gadol Talmid Torah Yosef Mikibud Avraham. Okay, now this is the Agadah that's going to take us all the way till the end of the parak. Okay, now Yaakov Avinu spends 14 years hiding out in the Beis Medrash of Aver. Now I don't know why it says Aver here. Maybe you have a footnote. I can't find anything. It should have said Shem V'Aver. But in any event, he's studying Torah in the Beis Medrash of Aver.
Here it says the Marsha saying that by the time he went there, Shem had already died.
Okay, I think there's a more profound answer to this question, but because I think there are two Torahs. There's the Torah of Shem and the Torah of Aver, and Yaakov Avinu was preparing himself for Golus. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky has a lot on this.
This
heard it from my friend Rabbi Shurin, who's a grandson, and I think at this point in time, Yaakov Avinu, and that's where the emphasis here is on Aver, he had to prepare himself for Golus. Okay, not for us now. In any event, Lo Nenash. Now wait a second. Keep in mind that for 14 years, Yaakov Avinu is hiding out in the Beis Medrash of Aver, steiging away, and he's not there with his parents to be mechabed of Avi'imo. And yet, as we're going to try to prove, he was not punished for those 14 years. There's going to be another period of years, which is 22 years, where he will be punished for the lack of Kibud Av V'Em. But here, since he was involved in Torah study, he was not punished. Now, again, there's a long discussion here. The Marsha and others, what was the Havamina that he would be punished? After all, his father told him to leave Paran Aram. So why would he be punished? Okay, that's a different discussion. Okay, now we are about to start a major trip. Okay, now I worked very hard on this. I'm very bad at mathematics. I made myself a little chart here. We'll see if I can survive this. Okay. Omar Mar. Lama Nimnu, we're now on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. Lama Nimnu Shnosav Shel Yishmael. Now I'm going to translate this question, but the question itself makes no sense, and the Mefarshim are going to work very hard to make sense out of this question. Why does the Torah calculate the life of Yishmael? This is a pasuk in Bereishis Chaf Hei, pasuk Yud Zayin. It says Elish Nei Chaya Yishmael Mi As Shana Ushloshim Shana V'Sheva Shanim VaYigva VaYamos VaYosef El Amav. Okay, so the key, everything that we're going to learn is based on this number 137. Correct? Did I get that right?
Yes.
Okay, so far I'm doing good. Now, why is it? Okay, let's just see the Gemara's answer, then we'll wonder about the Gemara's question. And the Gemara's answer is Kidei L'yachis Ben Shnosov Shel Yaakov. We're going to be able to set up a chronological dateline for the years of Yaakov Avinu based on the age of Yishmael. So now the question is, why is Gemara bothered by this? So if you look at Rashi on the top line, he says, Malonu Limnos Shnos Harishayim. And as the Marsha and others point out, this Rashi is a Pella. The Gemara tells us above a Basra, and it's also based on this pasuk we just read. It says, "Vayomos veYosef el Amav," that Yishmael actually did tshuva. So why is Rashi calling him a Rasha? And hence the Gemara's plea: Why did the Torah have to bother counting the years of a Rasha? And the Gemara has to do somersaults to explain. It's really to teach us about Yaakov. So I have here in the back, and maybe you have it in your footnotes as well, I don't know, a discussion here in the Chiddah. The Chiddah, as you know, Rav David Azulai lived about 2.5 centuries ago, is one of the greatest, most prolific Sephardic rabbis in all Jewish history. We could probably fill up this whole room with his books. He wrote so many books. And the Chiddah wants to make a distinction between two levels of tshuva. And he claims that he came up with the real pshat in the Marashah, because the Marashah says that even though Yishmael did tshuva, nevertheless, the Torah wouldn't have given us the years of his life because most of his life, or part of his life, he was a Rasha. And the question is, but he did tshuva? So how do you understand this Marashah? Again, the Marashah is not really guilty here, because the Marashah is just trying to explain the Gemara's question. Lama nivnu shnosim shel Yishmael. Rashi says that he was a Rasha when he did tshuva. Says the Chiddah, there are two concepts of tshuva. One is tshuva shlema, which is called tshuva me'ava, and the other is tshuva me'ira. And he has a long discussion here to prove, I don't know which of our cousins are listening in to us here, because they're all over the place, that Yishmael did not do a genuine tshuva. His tshuva was called tshuva me'pnei ha'ira u'me'pnei ha'kavod. And that's not a complete tshuva, that's called tshuva me'ira. What's the difference between tshuva me'ira and tshuva me'ava? In the case of tshuva me'ava, this is sugi at the end of Yoma, the Gemara says that avonosav nasim ke zachios, correct? You remember this? That all his sins now accrue to him as positive. And in the case of tshuva me'ira, again, he did tshuva, but nevertheless, it's shkagos. It's not. It's still considered a blemish on his personality. And he says the following. Says the Chiddah, that's what the Marashah means in explaining Rashi, that even though Yishmael did tshuva, he was still guilty of all those years of perpetrating evil on the highest level, the most profound crimes that you can imagine. So even though he did tshuva, it was tshuva mi yira. And therefore there was never a mechika of ma'asav ha'royim. They weren't erased, his evil acts, but rather it was kishkagos. And therefore, lo roi lahazkir shnosav halolo batorah. Because every day that it passes in a person's life, and he sins, he does averos, that day itself is nifgam. Okay, these are more Kabbalistic ideas, that there's an entity called time, and every person gets that gift of a day, and when you blemish that entity called time, that goes on the record. And if we don't count the days of a person's life, if those days are tainted with sin. Elim came, also tshuva me'ava. Then tshuva me'ava impacts on the day that passed, that was nifgam, and it purifies it, it uplifts it. And those years can be counted. That's the Chiddah in a nutshell. Again, it's much more profound than what I gave you here. He quotes also a Turi Evan. The Turi Evan says that what the Gemara was asking was the following. That the Torah only counts the shnosav of tzaddikim. I'm sorry, let me go again. That with regard to tzaddikim, the Torah counts only the days and the years of the avos, Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov, etc. Meaning the imos and so forth. But we don't find, even with regard to tzaddikim, in the post-Avos period, that the Torah counts their days. And therefore, since Yishmael is not one of the Avos, even though he lived at the time of the Avos, therefore the Gemara wants to know, despite the fact that he did tshuva, he was a tzaddik when he died, nevertheless, why do we count his years? Okay, now we start the roller coaster. Okay, let's see if HaKadosh Baruch Hu give me siyata d'shmaya here. How are we going to calculate the years of Yaakov Avinu based on the 137 years of Yishmael? Okay. Now, the ultimate goal here of this entire very complicated calculation is to prove that Yaakov Avinu hid away in Shem V'Aver for 14 years to study Torah. He was not mechabed over the imo. He was not serving his parents, and yet he was not punished. Tichsiv, v'eilu shnei chai Yishmael mi'as shanos shloshim shana v'shev shanim. So Yishmael dies at the age of 137. Kama kashish Yishmael mi Yitzchak. How old was Yishmael at the time of Yitzchak's birth? Arbasri Yishmael. He was 14 at the time of Yitzchak. Tiksu. V'Avram ben Shmonim shana v'sheish shana v'ledes hagaris Yishmael Avram. Avram is 86 years old when Yishmael is born. Uksiv, Avram ben mi'as shana, bihi voled lo es Yitzchak. So Avram Avinu is 100 years old at the time of the birth of Yitzchak. Now, if Avram is 86 at the time of the birth of Yishmael, he's 100 at the time of the birth of Yitzchak. How much of a difference is there in age between the two? 14 years. Everything so far is good.
Yeah.
Oh. So now, until now we've been discussing the age of Avram Avinu at the time of the birth of Yishmael, the age of Avram Avinu at the time of the birth of Yitzchak. Now we want to move on to Yitzchak. How old is Yitzchak at the time of the birth of Yaakov? Uksiv, v'Yitzchak ben shishim shana b'ledes osam, the plural osam is a reference to Yaakov and Esav. So Yitzchak is 60 years old at the time of Yaakov's birth. Bar kama havi Yishmael kidis yalid Yaakov. So how old was Yishmael now at the time of the birth of Yaakov? Now since Yishmael is 14 years older than Yitzchak is 60 at the time that he fathers Yaakov. Therefore Yishmael at this point is 70 should be 74. Did I get that right? Yes, 74. Okay. Bar kama havi Yishmael kis yaled Yaakov, because again Yishmael is 14 years older than Yitzchak. Bar shivim v'arba. Okay, so Yishmael is 74 years old at the time of Ledas Yaakov. Okay. Now, kama paishan mishnei. Okay, I'm going to read to you the Hebrew translation. He says, "Kama shanim nisharu mishnosav shel Yishmael." In other words, if we subtract the 74 from the 137, we can calculate how many years from the time of the birth of Yaakov Yishmael continued to live until he died. Shitin utlas 63. So we're subtracting 74 because at this point in Yaakov's life, Yishmael is 14 years older than Yitzchak, who is 60. So that means he's 74. And if we subtract 74 from 137, we get 63. So there'll be 63 years from the time of Ledas Yaakov until the death of Yishmael. Correct? 63 years. So what time is how old is Yaakov then at the time of the death of Yishmael? Yaakov is 63 years old. Correct? Fine. Visanya. And now we have a braisa. Hoya Yaakov Avinu Bishoshin is Borech Me Aviv Ben Shishim Vishaloshanim. So Yaakov, just 1 second. Yaakov, at the time that he receives the brachos from his father, is 63 years old. Okay? Now, if Yaakov is 63 when he got the brachos, and Yishmael dies when Yaakov is 63, that means at the time of the brachos, that's the same year of Yishmael's death. In other words, I'm not sure exactly which month, but at least it's the same year. Ubo baperek, and in that period of time, Meis Yishmael, Kiritziv, Vayar, Esav, this is in the aftermath of the brachos that Yitzchak bestowed upon Yaakov, Ki Berach, Yitzchak es Yaakov, Vayelech Esav el Yishmael, apparently Yishmael is still alive, Vayikach es Machlas Bas Yishmael, Esav marries the daughter of Yishmael, her name is Machlas. And now the Torah identifies this woman, Machlas, as not only Bas Yishmael, but Achos Nevoyos. Now this is a pellet. Why does the Torah have to identify Machlas as the sister of Nevaios? In fact, we know that Yishmael and his children are listed in the Torah, and Nevaios is Yishmael's oldest son, which means by definition that Machlas is the youngest sister of Nevaios. So why at this particular juncture does the Torah have to identify Machlas as the sister of Nevaios? You've already told me that she's the daughter of Yishmael. Any Yodea, the rhetorical question, Shehi Achos Nevaios. The Torah itself says in Bereishis Chafei Pasuk Yud Gimel, the name delineates the names of the children of Yishmael, and his Bechar was Nevaios. Oh. So the answer is that there were two individuals who were responsible for this marriage between Machlas and Esau. Because the marriage process is a two-part process. So on the one hand, Machlas is called Bas Yishmael, Melamed Shekidshei Yishmael. Yishmael initiated the first stage in the marriage relationship between Esav and Machlas. That's called Kiddushin. We'll soon see that you can't take the word Kiddushin here literally because there's no Kiddushin for Bnei Noach. But then, at the second stage, who takes over and who actually follows through with Nisuin, the second stage, and marries off Machlas to Esav, it's going to be Nevaios. Why? So the Gemara answers, Malami Shekidshei Yishmael Vameis. Notice before Yishmael got to give his daughter over to Esav in Nisuin, in the second stage, the final stage, he died. So Yishmael's out of the picture now. Who follows through? He Si'a Nevaios Achiha. Nevaios now completes the marriage relationship, and he marries off Machlas to Esav. And the Mefarshim here in the back, they tell you that although, and this is the first round of Hilchos Ishus, there's no such thing as Kiddushin and Nisuin by Ben Noach, however, and all you need is Be'ulas Baal, but nevertheless, even at that time, they had a two-stage process. In the first stage of the process, they designated this woman for marriage. She still was in the house of her father. And then they followed through with Be'ilah, and that's called Ke'ein Nisun. So in any event, we see that Yishmael died very close to the time that Yaakov Avinu received the brachos. Because Yaakov Avinu, at this time, is 63 years old. And as we said before, Yishmael is how old? We said 74. So if we have 74 plus 63, we get 137. Okay, we still have another few minutes. Let's see if we can at least get to some point here in these calculations where we can make a break. Okay, so now we find that Yaakov Avinu is 63 years old at the time that he receives the bracha from his father. Now, let's add together the following. Shitin Utlos, 63 at the time of the brachos, Ve'arbesar, and then there are 14 years following the brachos, where Yaakov Avinu finds himself as a servant working for his father-in-law Lavan in order to marry the two sisters Rachel and Leah. So he has 7 years and another 7 years. Okay. Now, at the end of this 14-year period, Ad Misyaled Yosef. So we're going to add 14 to 63. Okay, let me just work that out. This I didn't get a chance to do. 14 and 63 is 4 and 3 is 7. Is 77. Okay, so Yaakov Avinu is going to be 77 years old at the time of Leidas Yosef. Now, how do we know that Yosef is born 14 years after Yaakov receives the brachos from his father? Meaning, how do we know to add to 63 14 years in order to arrive at the conclusion that at the moment of the Leida of Yosef, Yaakov Avinu is 77 years old? So he says here in the footnote that Yosef nolad ka'avor arbas reishonim ha'yom shehechel Yaakov lavod etzel Yilavon bavur Leah v'Rachel. So Leah, I'm sorry. So Yosef is born 14 years after the beginning of the servitude period of 14 years that Yaakov works for Lavan. How do we know this? The pasuk says in Bereishis Lamed Aleph, pasuk Mem Aleph. It says, "Avodatich arbas reishana b'shtei b'nosayach."
Right. So she got married to Rachel.
And then it says, "Vayikasha yolda rachlas Yosef, vayom Yaakov alavan shalcheni v'elcha." So when Yaakov Aminu says to Lavan, "I worked for you already for 14 years," and then he says, "Now, after Rachel gives birth to Yosef, he says, now send me out." It would seem that, just 1 second, Misham Vahola Ovido So Ba'avur Tsono. Okay, so even though the period of servitude lasted beyond those 14 years, even after Yosef was born, but that was a different kind of servitude. It wasn't for the sake of marrying the daughters, but rather for the sake of the tzon, and the whole parsha there, the kudim, and that whole story.
So the whole period where Rachel says to Havili Bani must have been a very short period.
Right. That I don't know how to answer that question.
I mean, it doesn't mean it was years. It could be just, a couple of months. But she wasn't getting pregnant.
Okay, Rabbi. So now what we have is the following.
You worked 47 years for
gentlemen, you'll fight this out because I want to get to a certain point. So how old is Yaakov Avinu now at the time of the birth of Yosef? He's 77, right? 63 plus 14. Uksiv. The Yosef ben Shloshim Shana Bamdol Lifnei Paro. So we add now 30 years from the birth of Yosef, at which time Yaakov is 77, till the point in which Yosef is appointed as the viceroy of Egypt, Hamea Visheva. So if we add 30 plus 77, we end up with 107. So Yaakov is now 107 years old, and Yosef is the viceroy of Mitzrayim. Shev desiva, vitarti dechanfe. Now the first 7 years of plenty pass by, another 2 years of razon, what's the opposite of plenty, of lack of food, whatever the word is. Famine, excellent famine. So we now have to add 7 years to the life of, right? I'm sorry, we have to add 9 years. 9 years, sorry, right? 9 years to the life of Yaakov in order to calculate the moment in which he stands up in front of Paro. So let's see. 107 plus 9 is 116. So Yaakov Avinu Hamea Veshitzar, Yaakov is now 116 when he comes down to Mitzrayim and he meets Yosef. Uksiv, Vayomer Paro El Yaakov, Kama Shnei Yemei Shnei Chayecha. Now something is not going to stim over here. Right. Yaakov says to Paro, Yemei Shnei Megurai, Shloshim Umaas Shana. All of a sudden, Yaakov became 130. How could Yaakov be 130 years old when he came down to Mitzrayim at the age of 116? Are we going to say that a period of 14 years passed by, and the Mepharshim say, try to explain why that's not a possibility, 14 years of Yaakov settled in Mitzrayim until he met Paro? That doesn't make sense. So we're missing here in the calculation 14 years. Why? Because at the time that Yaakov Avinu is appearing and it comes down, we said was 116 Mea Veshitzar Havyon, and now you're telling me, Yaakov, that you're 130? There's 14 years in the missing. El Shmami No. What do we see from this? Our Basre Shnin, excuse me, there's a 14 year period Sha'avru that passed Mi Yitziyosu Mi Beis Aviv. This 14-year period, which is not in this calculation, from the time that he left his father's house until he came to Lavan, and that's going to jack up Yaakov's age by 14 years to make up this discrepancy between 16 and 130. Now, where are those 14 years between the time that he left his father's house until he came to Beis Lomon? Where was Yaakov? You know, we've got to account for Yaakov. The man is missing for 14 years, heads down. You know, he's below surface, underground. And the answer is the Havi Beis Aver. He was in the yeshiva of Aver. He's dedicating himself to the study of Torah. And I'll read to you what he has here in the footnote. Klomar, arba'as reishona shechaserim lona b'cheshbin, heim arba'as reishona she'osak b'torah b'beis eiver, v'heim lo huzkru b'ksuvim. Now, why did the Torah omit this 14-year period? And the answer is to teach us that he was not punished for those 14 years. This sanya we learned in a b'raisa, that Yaakov was actually hiding out in Beis Aver for 14 years. So Yaakov Beis Aver, Mutman is Lashon Atmana. Atmana is something that's underground, so to speak. Arba'as Reis Shana. And the Brisa says, Aver was still alive at the time that Yaakov Avinu left the Beis Medrash after that 14 years. Umesli achar sheyorad Yaakov Avinu la'aram na'arayim. Now this piece of information is l'chor totally irrelevant. And the Mefarshim, we're going to have to work hard to see why this is mentioned here. In any event, the Brisa goes out of its way to tell us, for some unknown reason, that after Yaakov Avinu checked out on his way to Aram Naharaim to Beis Lavan, Aver died. Shteishon, two years later. So Yaakov, at the time of the passing of Aver, was 79 years old. Yotzo Misham, Ubala li Aram Naharaim, so he left the Beis Medrash of Aver, he came to Aram Naharaim, Nimtza, Kisha Omad al Be'er, how old was Yaakov Avinu when he stood at the well in order to save Rachel, and that's where he met Rachel, Ben Shivim Vishana Vishavashonim. And now the Gemara says, we know until Omi Anish, and with this we'll have to end for today, Desanya Nimtza Yosef Sheperish Me'aviv Esim Ushtaim Shana. Okay, so this I want to pick up tomorrow. We're gonna finish the Mirza Shem the Perek tomorrow, and we're gonna try to prove that for those 14 years that Yaakov was underground, that he was dedicated to the study of Torah, he was not punished. All right, everyone should have a great day.